Dish with the Likeness of Roxelana, Mid-16th Century. Read for you by Elif Shafak. Around the same time as Catherine de' Medici was turning fashion at the French court on its head, a certain Roxelana, a slave from what was then Russia, was shaking up the balance of power in Constantinople and laying the foundations of what would later be known as the Sultanate of Women. An exertion of female influence on state affairs in the Ottoman Empire that would last for nearly 100 years. If you haven't heard of this episode, don't be surprised. The Turkish government sets great store by sweeping this unusual episode of history quite literally under the harem carpet. A few years ago, when Turkish TV series The Magnificent Century made reference to this era of influential women, President Recep Erdogan had the extremely successful soap unceremoniously banned simply because this historical truth didn't fit into his patriarchal version of national history. All the same, it doesn't quite seem to fit with the image we have in Europe of women's lives in the harems of the 16th century Ottoman Empire. Ever since European artists set out in the 18th century to describe and paint the so-called Orient, and as they did so, plainly relied a good deal more on imagination than observation, the cliché of an Oriental woman has been one of overwhelming sensuality, and that of a harem, one of a plush, luxurious brothel. The wishful thinking of a few Europeans made these places out to be ones in which every element, every velvet cushion, every wall tile, every tea glass, was aimed at two things alone: sex and seduction. Yet they weren't nearly as dissolute as some people clearly wanted them to be. The harem was less a place of endless male pleasure and more one designed to ensure the line of succession. What went on there was serious and important. It was about conceiving a pool of potential heirs with the roughly 300 concubines who lived within its walls, in order to decide later on which of them might be most suited to the throne. The Sultan didn't simply march in, nor did he pounce on the very first concubine who happened to catch his eye. Instead, he followed a strict protocol and order. The idea was to impregnate as many women as possible, which meant not spending too much time with any one of them, but swiftly moving on to the next as soon as she was pregnant. Most sultans adhered firmly to this principle until Suleiman the Magnificent was gifted the aforementioned Roxelana, a woman so beautiful and clever and brilliant that he quickly threw all the rules overboard and devoted his attention entirely to her. When his mother, who governed the harem, finally died, he completely cast off all conventions and constraints, freed Roxelana from her status as a slave, and made her his wife. At that time, this must have been a sensation. Right across Europe, from Paris to London to Florence, people gossiped and tittle-tattled about little else. The Sultan had married a woman from his harem. What was going on there? This Venetian dish, which was made in the mid-16th century, using an extremely expensive, very recently developed technique of reverse painting on hollow glass, is indicative of the fascination this woman elicited at the time, even beyond the empire's borders. She was painted again and again, sometimes alone and sometimes with Suleiman. A portrait of her even emerged from Titian's atelier, according to reports made by the Italian ambassador to the Ottoman court. Above all, though, these pictures testify to one thing. namely that the cliched idea of the harem favorite, kept far away from the prying eyes of the rest of the world, reclining on plump cushions and stuffing sweet treats into her mouth as she considers how best to give the Sultan sexual satisfaction, was pretty far removed from reality. Roxelana didn't live hidden away, but was very much visible to important visitors. Her main occupation wasn't sex, but state business. When foreign ambassadors came to court, they sometimes met with Suleiman and sometimes Roxelana. When the Sultan was away on a campaign of conquest, it was she who informed and advised him about events at home. And she seems to have done that very well indeed. The Ottoman Empire was seldom more powerful than under their joint rule. Naturally, not everyone appreciated the power she wielded. People said all kinds of awful things about her. For example, that she had set fire to the original harem, which wasn't in Topkapı Palace back then, in order to move into the palace and so bring the harem closer to the center of power. Accusations of witchcraft were also very popular. How else could she have held one man's attention for so long? Others saw her as a schemer and murderer. The British Museum in London houses a 17th century playing card depicting Roxelana as the cruel one. The game brought together the most important queens in history. Hürrem Sultan, as she was known back then, plays the role of the wicked queen who has the son of her rival killed in order to secure the throne for her own offspring. It's not clear whether this really happened or not. At any rate, it won't have done her sons any good as neither of them became sultan. The power of the harem, which was ushered in by Roxelana and later discredited by small-minded people as a gynocracy, if not ignored altogether, nonetheless persisted for several decades after her death. It was a kind of state within a state, a command center from which women could see everything, hear everything, and exert their influence discreetly but effectively. Perhaps even with the support of Europe's female rulers, such as Catherine de' Medici and Elizabeth I. At the very least, Hürrem Sultan's successors, Safiye Sultan and Nurbanu Sultan, kept up a lively correspondence with both of them.